Okay, so let's start. So it's a shorter week this week. The Perek Tes is a very short Perek, also a very important Perek. If we recall from a couple of weeks ago when we last left off, we left off with David with like his sudden, incredible, massive imperial conquests. And he's attacking the Plishtim and he's Moab and Edom and Aram. And all of a sudden, like over, makes it sound like overnight. It wasn't actually overnight, but it's making it sound like overnight. David has transformed from a local king to a Middle Eastern emperor. You know, he starts with he was by himself as a fugitive, and then he had his little band running away from Shaul, and then he has Shevet Yehuda, and then he goes to Yerushalayim and unites the kingdom. It again and is defeating everybody around. So Michael Achael, from success to success, he has the Aron in Yerushalayim. Hashem has promised that he will not build a base of Mikdash, but his son will have a dynasty, and it's all amazing. So Perek Tes is going to take a big step back. And one of the main questions we're going to have to ask is, why is this Perek here? This is the Perek where David shows kindness to Mephibosheth, the son of Yehonasan. And as we'll see, there are just some strange things that need to be worked out in the parak over here, but with really important consequences. So right after being told about all of David's victories, and then the end of Parak Ches told us the key members of David's government. So the Navi now says, Vayomer David, hachiyish od asher nosa lebeis Shaul, Ba'asa imo chesed bavur Yonasan. So is there anyone left from the house of Shaul who I can do kindness for on behalf of Yonasan? Now, the Malbim points out this is a very surprising question, very surprising thing for David to say, because like he was David's son-in-law, so he knows the family. Like, what does he mean? How does he not know who's around from Shaul's house? How do you not know who's there? He knows that three sons Shaul's three sons were killed in battle against the Plim. So, and he's also going to know about some of Shaul's sons who are going to be killed by the Givonim. So, Malbim understands that Shaul's descendants have gone into hiding. Just like kings of old, when a king takes over, so he'd kill even their brothers, you know, in the Ottoman Empire. So the Sultan would have a million different wives and they'd have a million different kids. And the minhag for hundreds of years for the Sultans was whichever son became Sultan would kill all his brothers. I think the minhag was he would kill them. The good news is it was mean, but he'd kill them with a silk thread. They'd be strangled with a thread made out of silk. So at least it would be soft as it was choking them. So that was, you know, the custom among kings from time immemorial. And if it was true for the Ottoman sultans 200 years ago, so certainly it was true for Middle Eastern kings and despots, you know, 3,000 years ago in the time of David. So it says Shaul's family goes into hiding and they're all terrified. And that is why David does not know who else is around. Right? Ratzalomer im odem chayim says, I'm not sure who else is there. Now the Malbim quotes the Abarbanel, who has another proposal. The Abarbanel says that David is setting up his government. He wants to promote sons of Shaul to be real leaders and officers in the government. So either way, so the Malbim is saying, look, he doesn't know who's around there because they're in hiding, and he's looking for some of them who are fugitives because he just wants to do chesed for them. Of course, the Abarbanel says, you know, going back to Abarbanel's own experience, that Abarbanel, that David is now setting up his government, and he wants you know, any of Shaul's descendants to be people in his government, right? That goes back, it all goes back to David's original promise to Yehonasan, which was, you know, I'll be the king, and you'll be the second in command. You will be the Mishnah Lamelach. So the Barbanella is saying that David couldn't do that with Yonah's son, but he wants to do that with one of his descendants. So that's the basic idea. I think the Malbim really gets the pshat, which is we'll see that Mephibosheth, Yonah's son is going to be terrified. He's going to be terrified that David wants to have him killed. That's probably because he assumes he's a rebel. He's a Mori B'Malchus. Shaul's family did not go along with David's reign. Even after Shaul died, Ishbosheth still stood out. And so David is looking for any fugitives from Shaul, but he wants to do chesed for them. Now that sets up the second question, which is, when is this happening? Right, when is the story happening exactly? Because it's hard to imagine that, you know, Yonah's son died and then 7 years went, 7.5 years went by and David gets to Yerushalayim. And then it seems like many, many more years go by as David fights all of those battles we saw a couple of weeks ago. It's very hard to imagine that it's, let's say, you know, 20, 25 years into his reign where all of a sudden David wakes up and says, oh, yeah, right, I forgot I had like a bris with Yehonah's son. Let me think who might, is there anyone around that I can do that with? But so it's just difficult to imagine. So. Did I put the Radak here? No, I did not. But the Radak happens to think that this did happen chronologically after all those battles. If you look at the Dat Mikra, you look at most of the Mefarshim, the modern Mefarshim, and they suggest that this Perek is out of order. This Perek doesn't belong over here. We'll need to understand why this is here. But the argument is that this Perek happened much, much earlier. Closer to the time when David first came into Yerushalayim after he initially stabilized his reign. Let's remember, when David comes into Yerushalayim, immediately he's attacked twice by the Plishtim. So when David comes into Yerushalayim, he has no time for anything, any sweet personal business, because he needs to first establish control of the monarchy, make sure he's actually running the show, make sure he has loyalty from everybody. Then the Plishtim are attacking him from the east and he needs to, the west, and he needs to push back against them. And it's like, you know, national security emergency. So, okay, after the first few years, things are able to calm down a little bit. David has some stability. And then he looks to see, can I do chesed with someone from the house of Yehonasan? Don Micker also points out, Mephibosheth, who's Yehonasan's son, the Navi told us a few prakim ago, was 5 years old when Shaul and Yehonasan were killed. It was that one throwaway pasuk, if you remember, in Perek Dalid, the Perek where Ishbosheth was killed, the Perek which was just a total collapse of the house of Shaul, where the Navi snuck in a line for us that Yehonasan's son, Mephibosheth, had been crippled as a five-year-old because his governess basically panicked after they lost the battle of Har Gilboa. She dropped him fleeing from the Plishtim, and Mephibosheth was, they never had a chance to reset his legs. So he grew up with, you know, broken legs that were never reset. So he's lame. Well, if he's 5 years old then, so that Mikra says, let's see, 7.5 years go by where David is in Chevron. So now Mephibosheth is, let's say, 12 and a half, he's 13 years old or so. And the Navi here is, in this paragraph, is going to tell us that Mephibosheth has a very, very young son named Micha. Von Micker writes, people from the royal line usually got married at a pretty young age. If you were an aristocrat, you were getting married in your early to mid-teens. Does it make sense that Mephibosheth in our story is, let's say, around 20, you know, late teens, 20 years old or so? It's very, very young with a baby child. So if that's true, then this whole story is happening out of order, before all of David's imperial conquests. And then we need to figure out, well, why is this Perek Dafka written over here? But it makes a lot of sense, because why would David take so long to respond and to take care of Yonasan's son? Okay, so continuing in the Perek. So David is looking to see if there's anybody. Or the Malbim said, yes, no, because they're all in the hiding. So let me tell Spark, Pasuk Beis, Ubeis Shaul Hoya Aved Ushmo Tziva. So there's some servant in the house of Shaul, his name was Tziva. And even though he's a servant, mysteriously, Tziva has done very, very well for himself. Okay, I'm going to scroll down for a second to the pasuk later on in the parak just to get a sense of how well he's doing. And the pasuk says that Tziva has 15 sons and 20 slaves. Okay, if he has 15 sons, the odds are pretty good that he has multiple wives. So he probably has multiple wives, many, many children, many, many slaves. This guy, Tziva, who was Shaul's Eved, is mysteriously living very high on the hog. Okay? Might wonder how exactly is the how exactly has he pulled that off. So David calls him in, and David tells him, do you know anybody from the house of Shaul? You know, you lived in the house of Shaul. David probably knew him from back in the day when David lived in the house of Shaul. And David says, I want to know, because ve'esa imo chesed Elokim. I want to do the chesed of God. Now, two things about chesed Elokim, which I made the title this year. Number one, that is a very, very clear reference to the original bris between David and Yehonasan. Let's look back at it and recall. David and Yehonasan, this is the parak of the Rosh Chodesh lunch where David doesn't show up and the arrows. So before all that happens, Yehonasan and David make a bris. Yehonasan told him, look, I know that Hashem is with you. That amazing line where Yehonasan realizes that Hashem has abandoned Shaul. He's with David. He says, chesed Hashem, velo amus. Make do the chesed of God for me. Velo tachris es chastacha me'im beisi ad olam. Your chesed will never be cut off from my house. If I live, wonderful. If I don't live, then you're always going to do chesed with my house. And that is where, and that was the covenant that David and Yonasan made. So the Radak understands that chesed Hashem really means fulfilling the bris that was done before Hashem. He understands chesed here as meaning like loyalty. Chesed, not kindness per se, but meaning more like emuna. Hashem is the ultimate trustworthy one. So David here wants to fulfill the bris that he made before Hashem with Yehonasan. That Mikra suggests chesed Elokim can also mean a mighty chesed. So it could be godly chesed, it could be loyalty, it can be unbelievable chesed. Whatever it is, David clearly wants to do chesed, and he's tying himself back to that bris with Yehonasan. Now, what does Tziva say to the king? So Tziva says, "Vayomer Tziva al-Melech, od bein liYehonasan nechei raglayim." Yehonasan has a son who is crippled. Fine. David says, "Vayomer Melech, Efu, where is he?" And Tziva tells him he's in the house of Machir Amiel below Davar. It's first of all, Lo Davar, which is Aver Yarden. It's on it's like as far away from Yerushalayim as you could be. It's in the territory of Gad, all the way on the eastern border, the other side of the Jordan River. David is going to go there when he runs away from Absalom. Okay, so David sends messengers and he brings Mephibosheth over to Yerushalayim. Now, it makes sense that Tziva is not very enthusiastic about helping David. This is not a very friendly conversation. Right? David says, are you Tziva? He says, yeah, I am. Avdach. David says, anybody left? And Tziva says, yeah, there's one son who's lame. He doesn't even tell David the son's name. He doesn't say there's Mephibosheth, the son of your best friend. There's some crippled kid. And then David even has to tell him, Efo, yeah, where is he? Like, I'm asking you for a reason. I want to do chesed. Where are the fugitives? It's like, you feel like David's pulling teeth from this guy, Tziva. So we'll see why that might be in a minute. Okay, so David's looking for this guy, Tziva, for this guy, for a son. And then he's told, yeah, he's around, okay? And things are going to work out. Now, let's put out here, I think this is the goodest place to any, is to suggest why the Navi puts this here. Why doesn't he put the chesed here? In the next parak Yud of Shmuel Beis, like right after this, so David is going to send messengers to Ammon to Hanun, the king of Ammon. Reason why is because David says, I'll do chesed for Hanun because his father just died. I'll send a delegation to Menachem Avel because his father did nice things for me. Hanun, the king of Ammon, is going to disgrace the messengers that David sends because seemingly thinks of them as spies, although we'll see next week that's not so clear. And that leads off to a massive war, and that whole war is going to set up the sin of David and Bathsheba. So David is doing chesed in Perek, the beginning of Perek Yud. Makes a lot of sense that the Navi is putting these two episodes of chesed together. It could be for a couple of reasons. Number one, Navi wants us to know this is all building up, right? Like we're in Shmuel, we always need to be thinking about David and Bathsheba. Already at this stage, we should realize that even though David has become a massive all-conquering emperor, he has not been corrupted by conquest. We will not be able to blame the episode of Bathsheba and Uriah on the humble shepherd David being transformed into just an evil emperor. You know, to some degree, that transformation did happen to Shaul. Right, Shaul by Afoch Levacher. Shaul went from being the humble person hiding behind the baggage to being a ruthless king who murders Novi Arkanim. The Navi seems to be pointing to us by having back-to-back prakim of Chesed before the episode of David of Bathsheba and Uriah, and it's all being given to us after David's conquest. Is that we should know David is still a man of Chesed. The whole point of this parak is going to be. The chesed here is unbelievable. And the chesed in the next parak is going to be rejected. That is, it is going to be contrasted with the king of Ammon. I think that's basic point one, is at this point, the Navi needs to reinforce, realize that David is a man of chesed. Be a little bit more provocative. It's also possible that the David's inclination towards chesed, chesed being a personality which is just overflowing, always going above and beyond, very high energy, and always going beyond the norm. So, you know, we'll talk about this in a couple of weeks, but that there is a correlation between, like, Gilui Arayos is kind of the dark side of Chesed. One of the forbidden relationships in Archimos is described as a relationship of Chesed. Chesed can be bad. Chesed, overflowing love, you know, can lead to Erevah. So Dafka, David being a man of chesed, can be something which leads to the weakness coming up with David and Bathsheba. There'll be more to say about that when we explain or try to understand why David does so much of what he does when he tries to cover up the crime. For now, I think it's just clear that the Navi is putting two chesed episodes back to back. And now let's get a sense of what the chesed is and how the Navi drives home that chesed. So Mephibosheth is brought to David. Ever Mephibosheth ben Yonasan ben Shaul. The Navi, of course, has to emphasize that he's Shaul's descendant. He's not just Mephibosheth ben Yehonasan. He's not just the son of David's best friend. He is the surviving grandson of David's enemy who wanted him killed, who any other king would have assassinated in a minute. Not assassinated, executed in a minute. David Mephibosheth. So David says, Mephibosheth. He says, yeah, all right, here's your servant. David clearly notices that he's terrified. David, I will do chesed for you. I'll return all of Shaul's fields to you. And you're going to eat bread at my table always. And Mephibosheth seems overwhelmed. Okay, now we'll need to explain what exactly is that chesed. Like if David is just giving back land, why is that so exciting? But I first want to just note, take a look at this, how the Navi shines a spotlight on the human relationship between David and Mephibosheth. The first couple of psukim, when David was talking to Tziva, the Navi referred to David as Hamela. Not by name, the king. He's always the king. Many, many times, the Melech and Eved are the two milot mancha, the two words which are used time and time again in this parak. Right? So David, by Yomer HaMelech Elav, the king said to Tziva, are you Tziva? And he says, yes, I'm your servant. The Melech said, is there anybody? And Tziva says to the king, yeah, there's Yonasan. The king says, where is he? Right? It's all the king. The whole conversation between Tziva and David is between the Melech. It's not David the person. It's David the distant, powerful, intimidating king. The same is true in the second half, the end of the parable, when David calls Tziva back in and tells Tziva, you now are going to work for Mephibosheth. Once again, it's all Melech. Vayikra HaMelech al Tziva, Leomar Tziva el HaMelech, right? And Tziva says whatever the Melech commands. It's all Melech. Then all of a sudden, in the middle of the parash, when we have the interaction between David and Mephibosheth, he stops being Melech and he's David. Right? There is no use of Melech in these couple of psukim. Mephibosheth comes to David. David says to Mephibosheth, Leomar lo David altira. It is a very soft and human relationship. You see how the Navi is using that subtle piece, but to show how David is facing Mephibosheth not as a conquering, powerful king. I'm the victor, you're defeated. I'm from the family that won, you're from the family that lost. I'm the Melech, you are the Eved. No, when David faces Mephibosheth, it is a relationship of person to person. And the Navi brings that out even more by having Tziva not mention Mephibosheth by name. When is the first time we see Mephibosheth's name appear in the parah? Tziva wouldn't say his name. Tziva just said, there's a Bain Lihonason, Nechira Glyam. There's some cripple. David sees him, and the first word out of David's mouth is saying the name. Of course, when you call someone by name, that is a way of accomplishing human-to-human connection. So he's the Melech outside, but all of a sudden we have this eye of the storm inside where he is the human David trying to establish a connection and a relationship. It is a chesed with Mephibosheth. Right? Even the first pasuk of the parak, we remember David, a chesed role. He wants to do chesed for the descendant of Yehonasan. So you know, he's the Melech, but when he is talking to Mephibosheth, it's chesed. Okay, so that's all beautiful, wonderful. The Farshim will ask, well, hold on a second. What exactly was the chesed? Like, what exactly was David? What land is David giving to Shaul? So the Radak suggests that David is giving Mephibosheth his land back. Who took the land? Well, the Radak says that David took the land because Shaul's family are considered Moreid B'Malchus. We saw this a few, when Avner was still alive, like Avner was telling David, Yoav, look, everyone knows that, Avner said this to Ishbosheth directly. It's like, everyone knows that David is the rightful king. Ishbosheth insisted on staying as king, even after Avner leaves him. So that makes him a Moreid B'Malchus, makes him a rebel. Someone who's a rebel, the king is entitled to their property. So the Radak explains that David was entitled to Shaul's property, and Shaul had lots of property. David appropriated the land. Now David is giving it back to Mephibosheth. So it's a wonderful chesed because he didn't have to do any of this, and he's making Mephibosheth very rich overnight. You know, it would be one thing to not kill him, like the Malbim said, all other kings would do to the family of their enemies, but he's even restoring not just some of the land, but all of the land back to Mephibosheth. He's now become he's gone from like a penniless fugitive to one of the richest people in the kingdom. That's how the Radak understands what's going on, and that is the chesed. Rav Amnon Bazak in the VBM, though, argues, and I think it makes a lot of sense to kind of strike a balance. Radak says, well, hold on a second. Let's think about that guy Tziva for a second. How is Tziva so rich? How did that Eved become just like beyond loaded? You know, spoiler, in a few prakim, Tziva is going to scheme to try to get that land from Mephibosheth. And he is going to be partially successful. So Bazak suggests that Tziva had appropriated the land. And what David is doing, the reason why Tziva is so unfriendly and is so unenthusiastic about this conversation is because he is about to get significantly demoted. When Shaul died and Shaul's family died, there's no one left on the land. Well, Tziva is there, and he kind of just, you know, took it over. Now, David is saying the bill is coming due. You are no longer going to take the land. I am transferring it to Mephibosheth from Tziva. I think it's also possible that there could be something, you know, it could be somewhere in the middle. It's a little bit hard to imagine because Shaul must have had a lot. I mean, the king has a lot of personal land. It's hard to imagine that David had not, you know, like not all of the vast estate of Shaul was untouched. Also could be somewhere in the middle. David had taken a whole bunch of the land, but, you know, people are not experts in what exactly are the domain of Shaul's personal property. And Tziva had managed to, like, quietly, you know, assume some of the land for himself. Well, now that Mephibosheth, the royal household, is coming in, he's going to know full well what land belongs to Shaul, what land doesn't. And so Tziva is going to get a significant demotion, right? So it's possible that both pieces are true, because of Bazak's insight that, like, Tziva seems pretty miserable in the beginning of the parak, and David makes a big deal to him at the end of the parak. Right? He says, look, all of Shaul's stuff, you are going to serve him. And take a look. Like David says, you're going to work the land, and you're going to bring all of the produce to Mephibosheth. And he's going to eat on my shulchan. Like, it sounds like David is really giving some mussar to Tziva. So Bazak is suggesting that David is taking the land from Tziva, giving it to Mephibosheth. It could be that both are true. But either way, that's the real, you know, that's chesed part one over here. He's not killing Mephibosheth. He has just either, you know, he's just restored Mephibosheth's massive wealth to him. And he is, you know, Navi tells us, I think, four different times, right? Take a look. Yeah, four different times. And not only is Mephibosheth now rich, but he is eating at David's table. At the tocha lachem al shulchan itam. Four times. One, two, three, four. Like, the Navi has to keep on coming back to that point. And one time we're even told, Mephibosheth is going to eat on my table, ke'achad mibnei hamelech. He's going to eat at my table like he is one of the sons of the king. Okay. Now, that means then that not only is David sparing Mephibosheth, not only is David enriching Mephibosheth, not only is David possibly, Barbanel suggests, making him so rich, he's now an important government official, like the original bris between David and Yehonasan, and he'll be the Mishneh Lamalach, he'll be one of the most important people in the kingdom. Ka'achad mi b'nei hamelach, like one of the king's sons, he's being quasi-adopted into David's own family. That effort, which we've seen crushed time after time, to unite the families of Shaul and David. And they tried with Michal and it failed time after time, and then that just crashed and burned. We're bringing it back to some degree. Mephibosheth is going to be at the table like one of the B'nai HaMelech. And you think that, you know, it's not a coincidence that we said the bris here, the chesed Elohim that David is doing, is the callback, that original bris that David had with Yonasan. Well, the last time that we saw the idea of the king's table, the Shulchan HaMelech, come up in Sefer Shmuel, was that exact same parak, right? Who was supposed to eat at the Shulchan HaMelech? Who was supposed to eat at the king's table? Who was supposed to be one of the B'nai HaMelech, who's not actually the son of the king, but eats at the table as if he is the son of the king? Well, it was supposed to be David, right? That is how David and Shaul's relationship was supposed to be at the moment of the bris that David made with Yehonasan. They have to be hiding out in the fields making this bris, because if David goes into the meal, he's going to be killed. But now, as David is going back to the bris, Yehonasan, and fulfilling it, not only is he just living up to the technical covenant that he had made with Yehonasan, but chesed, he's even going beyond it to behave as king towards Yonasan's son, the exact way that Shaul was supposed to behave towards him. So it's not just an absence of revenge that's happening here, but it is literally the opposite behavior to what he himself had been exposed to from the family of Shaul. So he's fulfilling the bris of chesed, and he's fulfilling it, you know, above and beyond, where the dynamic between David and Shaul has been reversed, but his behavior is the total reverse of Shaul's behavior. The last point to make about this parak before we wrap up for today is the Navi gives us like a concluding line. The Navi tells us, Mephibosheth yoshev b'Yerushalayim, ki al shulchan ha-melech tamid hu ochel. So Mephibosheth dwelt in Yerushalayim. He was constantly at the king's table. V'hu piseach shtei raglav. And he was lame on both. So we need to wonder, why is that the closing image that we're given? Like, we know that. We know that Mephibosheth is crippled. We were told that in Perek Dalid. Tziva told us that earlier here, I think in Pasuk Dalid. Why is the closing image we're given one of Mephibosheth who is Piseach b'shtei ragla? And I think that there are a couple of things for us to say. Number one, continuing with this theme of the total reversal of the roles in the world of Shaul and David. Well, right, the original exposure we had to Shaul was that he was taller and more physically impressive than anybody else. David's kina for Shaul Yonasan, what do you say? Minisharim kalam yarayas kaveru, swift of the eagles and strong of the lions. So we get a sense of the total transformation that's happened to the house of Shaul, that the one surviving member is Piseach b'shtei raglav, right? He's fallen on his face. He's bowing down to David while his grandfather was taller than anybody else. And not only is he not faster than eagles, but he can't walk. So we're given a sense of the tragedy of Mephibosheth. That's point one. Point number two, we're given again a sense of the chesed of David. Look how vulnerable and helpless this kid was. And that is dafka the person that David is now going to invest so much into, right? You know, chesed. It's only to do chesed with those who are impressive, but it's the Yisoma Men Almanos that David is doing chesed with over here. And I think there's one last point, which is, for some reason, it's not really clear why, the Navi needed to tell us about Mephibosheth's son. Right? Mephibosheth's ben katan ushom micha. Oh, by the way, Mephibosheth has a young son. That does not contribute one iota to the parak. I mean, it's a hint to us about what Mephibosheth's age is. We talked about before that he can't be too old because he only now has a very young son. But it's like an irrelevant detail. It doesn't really belong here. A few weeks ago, we saw that Mephibosheth in Divrei Hayamim, this son Micha is going to proliferate phenomenally. He is going to have many sons, and then the Pesukim in Divrei Hayamim went down 11 different generations of this of Mephibosheth, ending, the pasuk says, with many, many very strong and powerful warriors from the house of Shaul. And of course, we know that ultimately Mordechai is a descendant of this line of Mephibosheth and Micha. And I think that it's super interesting and super important that when we had Shaul, appearances were everything. The theme of Shaul was he looks so impressive, and yet underneath there is so much that is wrong. I think what we might see here is as that bris between David and Yonasan, after so many false starts, finally hits gear. We finally have the chesed. We finally have the reuniting of those two families. We see that the redemption of Shaul's family, the person who is going to turn everything around, who is going to take a house which has fallen into such collapse that they have no money, he's the only survivor, no one even knows where he is. That person is going to transform and now establish a massive, important house in Israel, and his son is going to have many, many, many more descendants. Was Piseach b'shtei raglav. The physically impressive Shaul left almost nothing. And the person who's going to turn around and restart is the person who on the outside seems to have nothing going for him, externally seems totally unimpressive at all, but he is actually the one who's going to turn things around. And Chazal say his name is Mephibosheth because Piboshes, right? He'd embarrassed David and Halacha. On the outside, he was physically unimpressive. On the inside, a massive Tamachacham, a person who was a spiritual titan. I think they're getting some of that from here as well. We have the redemption of the house of Shaul from someone who really seems like his opposite in every way. So it's a beautiful, uplifting parak. David's chesed, the dream of Yonasan fulfilled, at least for now, because it won't be later. So next week, we'll jump back into the world of army and conquest, and we'll see the exciting battles that David Yoav is going to fight. So thanks, everyone, for coming, and hope you're able to actually hear me. And looking forward to learning more next week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. That was great. Your sound was good.